This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are in The Think Tank, and the legislature has gone home. And are we safe?
Why is Howie clapping?
Oh, I get my life back again, as does John.
All right. Yes, okay. Indeed.
So the question is, what happened? And I think in some cases, equally important, what did not happen? Our guest, Howie Fisher, who lives down there in Session.
Yes, I do.
And probably more than anybody else, Howie's alter ego is Capital Media Services. And along with him, John Gilliland, who lives there perhaps a little bit less, but...
I'm a long-term visitor.
He's a long-term visitor, and here maybe to keep Howie honest. And
we'll try.
Okay, legislative session, legislature, and then the governor. Some of this stuff got signed. Some of it got vetoed. Let's start out topically. Education, what's a big story?
Well, there's two big stories in there. One is, of course, K-12 education. There is a little bit more money in there. That while the governor said, well, we're going to move $134 million into the classroom, this was, we're going to take it out of the left pocket and put it in the right pocket. Nobody, you know, believed that.
Nobody believed it, and they finally relented on that point.
Did they take it out of to put it into the classroom pocket?
Well, they were going to say, I'll tell you what, you've got money, for example, for transportation. You've got money for utilities. So I'll tell you what, don't spend that, because Lord knows APS doesn't want their bills paid, and put it into the classroom. It was artificial. And what you ended up with out of close to $4 billion in education funding, it ended up $11 million. I mean, we're talking pennies on the dollar.
So just enough for them to say we increased education.
Exactly.
It's rounding error, but it's quote-unquote an increase.
Now, but here's the rest of the story. If you consider that there are more children in school, plus you consider what the courts have mandated for inflation funding, which hasn't been fully funded, you're actually winding up with less money on an inflation-adjusted basis per student.
John, I think that's an honest statement. Let's face it, education got cut by any reasonable accounting.
Well, of course it got cut, but one has to look at the budget and say, where's the money? I mean, who was the bank robber that said, well, you know, I rob banks because that's where the money is? When you cut a budget, when you find money, you have to find that money where it is. And education is the single largest line item in the budget.
Well, and one of the biggest cuts, if we look at what's happened over the last several years, not just one year, I think the universities have been cut from a state appropriation of about $1.1 billion down to $600 million. In other words, not quite in half yet, but very close to it.
Well, but again, that's the other half of the equation. See, K-12 is at least... has some statutory protections. In 2000, voters mandated that you're supposed to increase aid to education with inflation. Now, they didn't exactly do that, which is why we're still in court.
Mm-hmm.
Universities are the other big thing that lawmakers are willing to cut, because you've got only two other big pots of money. The Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, our Medicaid program, also voter protected, and the Department of Corrections, which has ballooned over $1 billion now, but nobody is willing to touch that proverbial third rail of saying, you're soft on crime.
Because some bad guy may get out someday and do some bad thing, and
exactly.
Then a legislator or governor exactly. might be held responsible.
Which has been a political move since politics.
Oh, understood.
Okay.
But what's unfortunate is that for the people who even suggest the most narrow changes, for example, are there people who could do well in intensive probation, ankle bracelet, the total electronic monitoring, which you can probably do for less than $50 a day. Plus, if they're working, they can help pay for their own incarceration. People like Bill Kopernicki suggested it. He got defeated. People like Cecil Ash suggested it, another Republican. He got defeated.
Cecil Ash is a justice of the peace judge.
And former defense attorney, you know, heaven forbid.
Okay.
But the fact is, yes, there are people who belong behind bars. There are people who I want behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
But we have 40,000 people in state custody at cost $50 to $70 per day. You know, we could send them to the U of A a lot cheaper.
Okay, but understand this. We're talking about optics. Those of us that look deeper into this understand that probably the right thing to do in more prisons and more beds, not the right thing to do at this point in sentencing reform. We all want that.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, you look at the optics of the average voter. He did put $11 million more. If that's what you're going to say is the bottom line, put $11 million more on the plan. He increased classroom funding, optics.
Okay.
He put more criminals behind bars, optics.
Understood.
This is re-electoral politics.
But here's the other optics that sort of gets lost in the translation. During the Brewer administration, they voted to give hundreds of millions of dollars of tax cuts, phased in over the next few years, to corporations. Mm-hmm. Assuming that by now we would be fat and happy. Well, we're not. We've only recovered maybe 70% of the jobs we've lost. So rather than go to the companies and say, look, we'll give you those tax cuts. How about we give them to you in FY 18, 19, and 20? No, we didn't want to do that. We have $300 million in tax cuts being phased in. And so to say that somehow there isn't the money out there to properly fund K-12, to perhaps properly fund universities, whatever that level is, to fund additional prison beds. The money is there. They've decided to forgo. We're not talking about raising taxes. We're talking about saying, let's delay some already approved tax cuts.
In other words, we are continuing to cut taxes in spite of the pinches elsewhere.
Yes.
But didn't those promised tax cuts, weren't businesses making decisions here in Arizona based on the promise of those tax cuts? And if you remove them, you renege on the deal, you pull the rug out from under them, as it were, aren't you then going to negatively impact the economy, thus hurting tax revenues later on?
I would like to hear a businessman with a straight face tell me that they ever really based a significant decision on tax rates.
Well, some
they
of them
would.
No,
for employee hiring, absolutely.
I think in some cases that's true. And I think, again, that's why I'm not saying get rid of the tax cuts. The question of delaying and phasing them in over a longer period of time. But here's the other part of the equation. You've heard the same arguments. We have businesses. We had the head of a major construction company write an op-ed in the Republic saying, forget the tax cuts. I can't find qualified people because we're not graduating folks from high school or college that I can rely on. So that's the other half of the question for the business
community.
You see
this morning's paper, the statistic, 75% of the teacher students in the ASU School of Education want to move out of state to get a job?
Well, some of that is teacher salaries. I'll give you another interesting statistics which shows something about the economy. The Department of Administration, Aruna Murthy, who's the chief economist there, said that in the next 2 years, 71% of the jobs being created in this state will require a high school diploma or less. If we want high-quality jobs, if we want the jobs that pay well, maybe we need to have an economy built on something more than high school jobs. Do you want fries with that?
All right, and well done, Howie. Now we just walked past tax day. That's right, tax day was this week. Let's talk about taxes as we come back. We have Howie Fisher and John Gilliland joining us right here on the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, back with Howie Fisher, John Gilliland, and as promised, we're going to talk taxes. Howie, what did the legislature do with respect to taxes?
They didn't do much this year. You know, as we were mentioning in the last segment, they continued to allow certain things to phase in. Now,
in other words, these are taxes that were scheduled to be cut.
Yes.
That they were put in to be cut several years ago.
Yes. Under the assumption that things would be better. Now, they did approve a couple of tax cuts, one of which has to do with conforming with federal law and capital gains and investments and 527 and all that stuff that, you know, makes my eyes want to glaze over, mm-hmm. which will cost about $30 million. And then they also said that we're going to index income tax brackets. So right now there's a hard break in between tax rates, let's say between $50,000 and $50,001. They're saying that assuming that inflation is 2%, that tax break point is going to be $51,000. Doesn't lose a lot of money, but again, like you say, optics, yes, mm-hmm. we've cut taxes.
Doesn't lose a lot of money this year, but if we take that over a 10 or 20 year period, it's a lot.
It can be, but the argument is if your salary is only going up commensurate with inflation, should you be forced into a higher tax bracket? So I can understand that, but all of these tiny little things add up. And so the question becomes, we're looking at this from the perspective of what are our taxes? We've never had in this state this grand discussion of what do we want from our government? Do we want our roads paved? Well, yeah, okay, but we haven't raised the gasoline tax in decades. And in fact, cars are more efficient. Do we want police? Yeah, okay. Do we want teachers? Yeah, probably, although there's some people who would just as soon abolish the public school system. So we, you know, the question is, do we find out what we want and then decide what we're willing to tax ourselves for that?
Well, and again, it really boils down to how tax policy can shape and affect economic policy in general for the private sector. These businesses base much of their decision-making on taxes, the employees that they're hiring on, the ones they're laying off, and we are still languishing in the doldrums of a continued economic downturn. I mean, we're hiring, but we're only hiring at half the rate of the nation right now. We've only recovered, what, 60%?
Yeah, and that is something, if you look at unemployment as a measure, and I've tracked this over the last 20 years, we used to be a point or two below the national average. Since the recession, we've been a point or two above the national average,
which is consistent with what you just said. Yeah, and we tended to go deeper, you know, in our losses. Part of the problem is we had an economy built on people coming here. Mm-hmm. One job out of every 11 prior to the recession was in construction. That's an amazing number. It's half that many now. And so construction will never come back to where it was. I mean, I think that people have suddenly realized you don't build a bunch of spec homes and then say, oh, gee, somebody will come and buy them.
That didn't work out too well in 07, did it?
No. But this comes back to what we were talking about earlier, what John and I see every month when we go down to the Department of Administration. Where are the jobs being created? Some of it is healthcare. We've got an aging population. Curiously enough, DOA credits Obamacare with helping. They said, if we've got more people, we have 200,000 more people with insurance now, which means they're going to the doctors instead of staying home, and that's creating new jobs.
The hospitals sure like that.
The hospitals like it.
Heck, they do.
And certainly. So where else are the jobs being created? Leisure and hospitality. Bars, restaurants, those do you want fries with the jobs that I was kidding about, but that's where the jobs are being created. Some of it in retail trade. Manufacturing is down. Some of that is because of the aerospace industry being down because of federal sequestration. But our economy is continuing to shift in some ways toward the lower paying jobs. You know, four out of the five biggest jobs being created next year are those kinds of jobs that you don't need advanced degrees
on.
Mm-hmm.
If your whole economy is based on let's have low taxes and screw education, we don't care who comes out of the schools, what kind of jobs are you going to get?
Well,
That's a little harsh, screw education.
Even I find that, look, there are certainly questions of can the universities be more efficient? Do we have unnecessary duplication within the universities?
Yes.
How many business colleges do we need? You know, the LRMBA from the U of A is being offered now in Phoenix. You can get a W.P. Carey MBA online. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. I'm just saying there are places perhaps to become more efficient. There are things that can be done online, much more. ASU has done a very good job of doing that, so you don't need to build a lot of buildings. But at some point, look, you can't get a chemistry degree online. You don't want the folks experimenting with blowing stuff up in their basements. Do you want chemistry grads? Do you want computer grads? Do you want folks who are qualified to do the jobs that Intel and Motorola are creating?
But labor is a commodity. Education is a commodity. Mm. It doesn't matter if you're teaching a new generation of computer programmers in Arizona when there aren't companies in Arizona who are hiring that next generation of computer programmers. You're doing is you're subsidizing an education here for people that are going to take that education elsewhere.
But now we're down to that chicken and egg situation. You know, we had the head of Intel tell a committee about 6 years ago that he didn't bring the new fab plant to Chandler because of the taxes. He was hoping to have the qualified graduates. And he said in 2020 hindsight, he would have made a different decision. So the question becomes, if you have the graduates, you look at Silicon Valley, you look at the Route 128 corridor up in Massachusetts, you look at the Research Triangle in North Carolina – Because they're producing those people, there's a certain synergy that comes in. Other tech companies want to be near their different tech companies.
There's an anecdote.
And you've got a question of chicken and egg.
There's an anecdote from several years ago that I think absolutely supports that. Several years ago, Google opened two brand new offices, one in Tempe, the other in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They said, we have unlimited budget. We can hire as many top people as we can find. And basically, there's now 4,000 people working in Ann Arbor, and they pulled out of Tempe. They said, we just couldn't find people of the caliber.
So what helps then? More money? Throw more money at the schools. Well, How much does Coach Graham make? You never want to throw more money.
That's a loaded phrase. But again,
education is a commodity. And if Coach Graham is bringing in more money to that school than he is taking out in salary— Coach Graham is worth every penny he's making. That is just the way a capitalist economy works, and capitalism is alive and well in every sector of our economy.
But where is that money he's bringing in going to? If it's going to supplying better equipped graduates, okay. I don't see that. I see it going to stadium rebuilds. That's what I see. Well, you see what I mean?
So it's hard
for a guy who's going to send his kids to ASU. Mm-hmm. And now I know that they're not producing great graduates, but they have one heck of a football stadium. That's tough for me to swallow when they start complaining we don't have enough money.
Well, but you know what's really funny is you talk optics. You know, how many kids, when they're making decisions, say, well, I want to go here. ASU had a great reputation as a party school.
Yeah, it did. No longer. It fell off the chart, though.
I know. I'm very disappointed in that, I want you to know. But, you know, these become interesting questions, you know. What is the role of a state university? Now, maybe we don't need a state university, except for the fact that we have two constitutional requirements. One, for the legislature to fund a university system, and two, for the legislature to fund a university system with instruction as nearly free as possible. So you want to change the Constitution, do that.
All right, we're up against a break. You ready for this? Let's get into guns and abortion. That's next on the Think
wonderful.
Tank.
Wonderful. Only radio.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, big topics. Guns, abortion, as promised, social issues, everything from health care to driver's license,
religious discrimination, all the
social stuff.
Let's stick to guns.
Howie, what's the biggest happenings that you think in the broad social area?
Well, starting with your guns issue, is what didn't happen. There was a bill to allow people to bring their weapons into public buildings if there wasn't also security.
Mm-hmm. Except the legislature, as I recall.
Well, no, the legislature would have been included in that.
Right.
The fact is that there's an argument to be made. Look, you know what keeps guns out of buildings now? A little sign with a gun and a little red line through that saying no guns.
That works.
And that works.
Yeah.
And the argument to be made is that the good guys obey the signs. The bad guys say, yeah, you know.
It's a target-rich environment at that point
exactly.
For the bad guys. Yeah.
So the argument is if the government is not going to keep all guns out, then the good guys, the people with a concealed carry permit, should be able to bring them in. The concern of the cities, obviously, was, well, okay, but if we're going to do that, now we're talking, you know, perhaps $100,000 per entrance to get the metal detectors.
And intriguing,
and
this is one more instance of an entity that says they want decision-making to be at a lower level, but they're putting in what they call an unfunded mandate.
Well, but
in other words, requiring their cities.
But it's not a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mandate. Mm-hmm. Cities would remain free to decide, yes, CCW carriers can bring their guns in there. You know, this is a trickier issue. Look, I don't carry a gun. Now, maybe I shouldn't be broadcasting that.
It's okay.
It's just I don't feel the need to. The funny thing is I had a concealed carry permit in New York when I worked there. I don't move to Arizona and got rid of it. Just the reverse of what everyone else does around here.
That's because you're a contrarian.
Well, that may be. But the fact is that, you know, there's an argument to be made that people have a right, or as they said in the House, a God-given right. You know, I don't remember the Second Amendment coming down from Sinai, but, you know, my Old Testament stuff's a little weak.
Come on, you saw he dropped one of the tablets.
Yes,
you
know, the 10
commandments.
Oh,
yes.
Good. I love Mel Brooks fans. So there's an argument to be made there. Now, the legislature and you know, John saw this, that they weren't willing to go there. Now, I have a feeling, politically, The governor didn't want that on his desk. Jan Brewer had vetoed this same bill three times before, and I think this governor didn't want to be in that position.
Well, no, because, again, it's optics. I mean, we talked about optics before. It's optics now.
He didn't want to veto a pro-gun bill.
Well, he didn't want to veto a pro-gun bill, but yet he did not want a law on the books allowing anybody and their mother to bring a gun into a public building.
Well, there's another one they killed, and this may have the same ilk. There was a proposal that would have abolished the state's ban on silencers and sawed-off shotguns.
Well, but
that one never got.
We all need those.
Yeah. But, well, yeah. Well, no, actually, the deal was you could bring the gun in the library, but you had to use the silencer. So, but
tell him you well don't done. Mean that,
but,
Howie.
But well here, done. But again, there's more or less there, depending on how you want to look at it, than meets the eye. You cannot get those items without a special federal permit. The argument was, if you can get a federal permit for a silencer, if you can get a federal permit for a machine gun, then why should the state stand in your way?
Actually, you're probably safe if you can get a federal permit.
Well, that's the point.
That's the thing even with CCWs. That's it. You are probably safe. You are someone who wants to go through a class, someone who wants to be a law-abiding citizen, to be able to carry and it's not even required here in the state. But if you do hold a CCW, guess what you can do? You can carry that thing wherever you want to, is what it is. And those are the good guys.
But that's the slippery slope. Fine. Today, the CCW, which you don't need to carry a gun now anyway,
right?
But you would need for that public building. What's to stop them next year from saying, well, you know what? If we trust people to walk down the street with a gun without a CCW, why don't we trust them to walk into a public building? Do guns make people want to shoot people, or do people that are going to shoot people anyway carry guns to do it?
What we do know is that people, the bad, you name the big ones. Name the big mass shootings that we have had. Let's start in Aurora, Colorado, by the way. He kept moving theater to theater till he saw that sign that you mentioned, Howie, the one that said, no one can bring a gun in here. Mm. That's the main argument, is that the good guys are the ones that are going to be in there holding concealed
carry. And these are interesting questions. And the fact is, look, we can argue whether the Second Amendment and the right of a, quote, well-regulated militia, what does that mean? But we have a version of that in Arizona that says in our Constitution, talking about the right to self-defense shall never be abridged. And that doesn't even talk about militia. As long as that's in our Constitution, you've got to take that seriously.
Sure.
Okay, let's move on. Elections. What was the legislation that we saw in elections?
Oh, well, let's see. If you're Republican and have friends with money, it was a good year. A couple of things that they did. Number one is 2 years ago, if you were running for the legislature, you could take $440 from any one person. They increased that before the 2014 election to $4,000. Well, that apparently wasn't quite enough. So they decided they're going to increase that to $5,000 because, you know, Lord knows people running for the legislature, you know, they got a lot of friends. I mean, I'm sure you'll be writing out a bunch of $5,000 checks to all your friends.
Got them all over here.
You know, they also...
Oh, $6,250, I understand now.
Well, the $6,250, there's a formula in there that requires all numbers to be deducted by 20%. That goes back to clean elections, which is how we got to the $5,000 in there.
This was 2 years ago was $400.
2 years ago was $400. Now we're up to $5,000. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they passed a law that said we're going to strictly construe the initiative and referendum and recall laws. Now this is particularly important. People in this state can propose their own laws, and this was put in our Constitution.
And the legislature does not like this.
And the legislature doesn't particularly like it. The courts have said we're going to use sort of a reasonable person standard that if somebody's signing a petition and they put in, let's say, the wrong date, but it's very clear the date because the dates above and below were the same ones, we're going to count that. This requires strict compliance. You could throw out entire petitions because somebody threw in a wrong date. And they're throwing new roadblocks in the path of those who want to create their own laws.
It creates an almost infinite number of ways that somebody can raise a technical objection to a petition.
Still a level playing field, though, in the sense that everybody has to follow the same rules.
Well,
that's right.
So any of these petitions could be thrown out based on a technicality.
Anybody who's doing a petition, but it changes the calculus between the people and the legislature. It makes it difficult to get something that will withstand scrutiny.
And let me go a step beyond that. The reason people propose their petitions is because the legislature hasn't done perhaps what they want, whether it's raising the cigarette tax, whether it's
education funding.
Education funding, legalizing medical marijuana. The legislature refused to do that. We have a very progressive Arizona constitution that allows people to propose their own laws. So the question is, should you trip them up on technicalities?
Well, I think the question is, shouldn't you ensure if your law is good enough to be passed that it be exactly right?
Well, this doesn't say that the law has to be right. This says in the terms of the petition gathering process. I'll give you a perfect example, although the measure failed. There was a measure on the ballot in 2012 to extend permanently the 1 cent temporary sales tax. The backers of the measure filed an electronic copy with the Secretary of State and then a printed copy. And because one was slightly different, there was a move to take it off the ballot. But the fact is that a proper printed copy was filed, and the court said, look, nobody was fooled by this. Nobody got wrong information, so we're going to allow it to go forward.
Because if it had been ambiguous, it would have gotten thrown out anyway.
If in fact, if they had only filed an incorrect copy with the Secretary of State, they would have thrown it out. But they said a copy was filed. There were two different copies. We know that nobody was
fooled. Hundreds of thousands of people signed a petition. Everybody knew what it meant, and under the old standard, that's good enough.
But that happens to me going down to the Corporation Commission. If I want to form an LLC, if any of those documents aren't done right, I'm sent back, sent packing, got to start over again. It's just kind of, why wouldn't that be different to creating a law?
Well, the difference is that ultimately the voters get the choice. This is not saying that the thing passes. This is saying give folks a chance. You still need, number one, to get a constitutional amendment, you need really 300,000 signatures on ballots. Gathering them in June is a lot of fun, let me tell you that.
Yeah, imagine.
And then you need to go out and convince voters to do something, to adopt some change in the law. So this isn't a question of your LLC, it's just that, you know, that's the only paperwork.
I'm going to break protocol. Can I do that, Doc? I'm just going to
go
ahead.
For it,
I'm
going to
break protocol. Let's keep these guys around. And I want to give John a little platform, too, because Howie is hogging the mic. I'm telling you.
Yeah, well.
let's give John a break. Let's give John a little chance to speak when we come back. All things Arizona State Legislature next.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back. John Gilliland and Howie Fisher, and we are going to try to figure out what all of this means. We've talked about a little bit of the minutiae of what got passed and what didn't get passed in the legislature. What about the players here, John? Who are the big winners? Who are the big losers, if any?
Well, if you're looking at a big winner, it's got to be Doug Ducey. I mean, he's pushed through a lot of his legislative agenda that he got elected on. He got lawmakers to basically dance to his tune. He got this session pushed through at lightning speed. He's gotten bills signed that were important to him. He's now on a whirlwind tour of the state promoting his accomplishments. Doug Ducey's the big winner in all this, and I think lawmakers really sort of took a back seat this session.
Yeah. Okay, Howie, I've heard people say, no, the real big winner here was Andy Biggs, the Senate president, who took the Ducey proposals and pushed them a lot in the direction that he wanted, which meant, for example, to take education. They made deeper cuts and some things like that.
Oh, Andy Biggs was a happy camper when Doug Ducey was elected, because Andy has been arguing, as John and I have both seen, for years that we have had a structurally unbalanced budget. You know, we balanced it with a little smoke, a little mirrors, a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down the
mortgage,
pants, that
the capital,
sort of stuff.
Things like that.
Yeah, and so, what Biggs said, we need to get back to a point where revenues equal expenses, and he looked at Ducey's budget and said, well, even that's not much. The governor had proposed $75 million in cuts to universities.
Right.
He had come back at 104, and then to buy a couple of votes, he took it down to 99.
In other words, the number ended up a lot closer to Biggs' number than it did Ducey's number.
Sure. And you know, from a fiscal standpoint, this was a very good year for Andy Biggs.
Well, granted, but I really do believe that Ducey picks up even more than Biggs does, in the sense that when people look politically, they tend to credit a single person rather than a body of people. And
sure.
Andy Biggs, he still is just one of many senators at the Capitol, whereas Governor Ducey is the governor. And people will give him credit for anything good that they see come out of this session.
Well, okay, John, let me ask you, next question, about the governor. He was something of a mystery when elected, didn't have a really deep kind of political history. So when he got elected, a lot of us were sitting around and saying, you know, where is his heart and soul? What
What does Doug Ducey believe in?
He believes in money. He believes in his wallet. He believes in the taxpayer. He wants to cut taxes. He's doing it. And he wants to do it in a rather imperial fashion. He is the CEO of Arizona. I really think he doesn't see himself so much as an elected official as he does somebody who gets things done. Okay. He's operating at the speed of business.
Okay. But that's what we've been complaining about. The government does nothing. Nothing gets done. And then we get a governor that gets a lot of stuff done, and if we don't like what he's getting done, then he's an emperor. This guy is just terrible.
We all of us speak two sides of the mouth. We want government to act, but we want it to act in a way consistent with our values too.
But our values is relative.
Yes.
Though. He was elected by people that have similar values than he does.
Understood. Now, you've got a couple of things. First of all, we've yet to figure out what the heck the speed of business means. I don't see businesses when they're making major
policy
decisions.
Wasn't it a Xerox line or something like that?
It was a line of Xerox or some delivery service.
Something like that. Moving at the speed of business.
This is a soundbite governor or hashtag governor, and we understand that. But the issue becomes in terms of it's one thing you get something through the legislative process. He decided unilaterally that, well, we're going to let Uber and Lyft operate, even though his own Department of Weights and Measures concluded they were operating illegally as taxis. Just this past week, he decided that he's telling the Department of Revenue, do not collect taxes from certain types of helicopter tour operators and from people who buy crop dusters, even though he vetoed the bill to get rid of the taxes because he didn't like the wording of it, simply said, I'm your governor.
Is that
illegal
to do? Is he working within his rights?
His attorney insists, of course, because he's being paid. He says, well, the governor, look at the Constitution. Well, the Constitution says the governor shall take care to ensure the laws are faithfully executed. He vetoed the law. I think that this is an extra legal action. I don't think he has the right to tell the Department of Revenue that actually has been to court, has won a $700,000 judgment against the company. Well, don't pursue this. You know, that to me seems a little, you know, that's the CEO versus the politician.
My guess is John says basically he is a fiscal conservative. We'd all be in agreement on that. What's the verdict on the social side of it, the social issues?
Well, he did sign a bill on abortion, which does two things. The smaller of the two things is to say that people who buy their coverage through the Affordable Care Act can't also buy separately a rider for elective abortion. The bigger thing, and the one that's going to end up back in court, as Arizona always does, says doctors have to tell patients who are getting a medication abortion, this is RU 486, oh, by the way, it can be reversible. There is essentially a small group of doctors that says if you take large doses of progesterone after the first dose, that you can reverse that. Most of the folks who are experts in the field say, no, you can't. So you've actually got a law in the books that says to, you know, what doctor says, well, look, I don't believe this, but the law, Arizona law requires me to tell you this could be reversible procedure.
I'm waiting for the AMA to weigh in on this because this one sounds like to me like the legislature is trying to practice medicine.
Oh, there was no question. The National Association of Obstetrics and Gynecology did weigh in and said, this is voodoo medicine. But the Arizona legislature figured, hey, we keep throwing abortion measures against the wall and, you know, some of them stick and a lot of them the Ninth Circuit says, no, you can't do that.
Well, no. And we've also seen the governor just signed that the gun bill, giving felons, non-serious felons, their gun rights immediately upon release from prison.
What is a non-serious felon? I think felon sounds pretty serious to me.
I imagine like a financial felon.
Right, exactly.
Nonviolent, maybe.
Yeah. Right. But the problem is that these same people still don't get their voting rights back. And one has to wonder why people would see gun rights as being more important than voting rights.
I have an answer. I know, because some of the felons who may have committed nonviolent felonies, like burglaries, they might vote Democratic.
Not if they get their. Not if a Republican governor gives them their gun rights back. Hey, you got it.
So, who's we have a loser here?
It's hard to say. I do want to put in one other winner in a curious way, although he could end up losing, is Carlisle Begay is a state senator from, well, he says he's from the reservation. He was living in Gilbert at the time, but we'll leave that aside.
Adjacent.
Adjacent, yes. Who Andy Biggs, the Senate president, recruited to run, and he became the, quote, bipartisan, the bipartisan budget. We found one Democrat to vote for this thing, and Carlisle got some things for the reservation. He got some roads. He got a bill passed to allow reservation kids to get vouchers for private and parochial schools. And so he walked away, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, pork barrel legislation,
he walked away. He got some pork there, but you got to wonder about his future in the Democratic Party.
Well, the Democrats don't get to decide who gets to be a Democrat, which is the other thing. The question becomes the 2016 election, and there's a primary up there, and the Navajo Reservation is largely Democratic. And who goes up against them, and does he get to say, I brought pork? Does that outweigh the fact that you also voted for measures that that shafted many other budget priorities?
Another big winner is the people who build the make the plastic bags for the grocery stores.
Oh, I mean, yes.
We are definitely going to be protected. And, you know, it's interesting because I recently traveled to California, and I was aghast when I was told, you'll have to pay for that plastic bag if you want
it. You know, I think more
I wasn't
given
the option to pay for it. I went to California, and I had to schlep my stuff back and forth to the car.
Well, I wound up doing that because I refused to pay a nickel for a plastic bag.
More interesting to me on that one is not that they – not – that they said we want plastic bags, but that they forbade local governments from doing something that they want. So in other words, if Flagstaff wanted to say we think plastic bags are harmful to the environment and we want to discourage it, they have been prohibited from doing so.
Oh, and these are the same people that criticize the federal government for doing the same thing to states like Arizona.
Yes, that's essentially you're the local control guys, except when we get to control what the local people do.
And that gets to your question of losers. Cities and counties were losers in a lot of ways. Not only did they preclude them from doing certain things, but then they said, you know, the things we don't want to fund that we don't want to fund in budget? Hey, those are yours now. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Indeed.
And so that's what happened. And so the cities and the counties are losers. Perhaps their taxpayers are the losers because now they're being forced to fund certain things that the state didn't want to fund.
We talk about not funding and funding. There comes a point, and this goes back to having a business governor, is that you've got to live with it. You've got to run a business within means. You have to, and people are going to be sad about it.
But that's the point, is the things they said to fund, whether it's jail costs or something else. Well, wait a second. The county send people to state prisons and stuff. Well, who should pay for that? Should it be the county that sends them or what?
Howie Fisher, John Gilliland, thank you guys very much for being right here in the Think Tank.